electoral test. The main beneficiary of the Tory Omni shambles will be Labour. But here's the rub. Labour post-Corbyn has gravitated to the extreme centre. Their leader, Keir Starmer, wishes to repeat the trick of three decades ago. On Black Wednesday of 1992, then Tory government lost confidence of the markets and sterling slumped. With the Tories branded financially inconsistent, Labour restyled itself New Labour. The party of sound finances, fiscal responsibility and centrist neoliberalism. Having ruthlessly purged his party of left-wing spirit with the sustained application of deceit, corruption and law-breaking, a major email leak has recently revealed Starmer's Labour can offer little but platitudes and market discipline. The aim is to manage the nation's finances in inclement times such that a little space for infrastructure spending can be found, which will rekindle upward circles of GDP growth. It's a bloodless pitch that stands a prospect of electoral success only through the opponent's ineptitude. The fundamental crises of social inequality and democratic decline from which the turbulence of Britain's politics stems would remain unaddressed. The very policies laid down under the last Labour government, including the empowerment of the Bank of England and the financial markets, are co-authors of the economic polarisation, social fragmentation and seething anger that lie behind the recent scenes of chaos at 10 Downing Street. Whether a Sunak premiership survives longer than a Truss, a Johnson or a Lettuce, the turbulence is set to continue in the Tory party.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss your problems, questions you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers of your questions are based upon Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. Today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Nakavi, who is a faculty member of Al Mustafa University and researcher in the Hausa Ilmiya of Qom. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, Professor Nakavi, in our previous episodes, we were talking about the things that a mother or parent or a father or a trainer needs to keep in mind while they are developing a child physically. That is the nutritional things they have to keep in mind. They have to keep in mind the exercise part. They have to keep in mind how much a child walks in a day, or even if it's a very small child. And then you said about the junk foods, we talked about fast foods, how they affect the development. Is there anything else you would like to add to physical development?
I mean, as I said, proper food, proper way to eat it, the etiquettes that we have in eating, the general etiquettes that Islam tells us, or generally also we know a lot of things that have to be taken care of, washing our hands before that, and all of these things are important. What is more important is that they should, I mean, when you start eating, and then again, if you remember that we mentioned that, why are we eating? The child should know that this eating or anything which we are benefiting from the material resources in this world is for a higher purpose.
All right.
That worldview has to be, you know, inculcated, imbibed in the child. That why am I doing exercise, or it is eating, or it is resting, is for the sake of my physical development. So through that physical development, I am able to develop my spiritual self,
yeah,
my mental and emotional and intellectual faculties are developed, so I become spiritually aligned with the purpose of my creation with the Lord.
So that why should always be there, why I'm doing this and how I have to do
exactly.
this.
Exactly, and always be thinking on these lines is very important. Even when we talk about sports, I mean, our children, whether girls or boys, they should be involved in certain sports, healthy sports, which give them relief and leisure time to think or to make them relax.
Or actually release that negative energy.
Exactly. I mean, today, in the day of the internet, and I don't know what's going to come to us when we go for the metaverse.
Yeah.
There's something very, very...
The life has already become a sedentary kind of life.
Everything is going to be in the virtual world,
yeah,
and we're going to be completely removed from the physical aspects of this world, which are very important. Our continuous interaction with this physical world is important in our physical development and thereby our spiritual development. So every child should be groomed in such a way that he or she takes up a certain, at least one or two sports which are necessary for them to release their energies, to become relaxed, not as a profession, as a way of having leisure and having fun and enjoying our lives.
Yeah.
Sports which are, of course, in harmony with the physical aspects, whether as far as being a masculine or a feminine gender, or as far as my physique is concerned.
All right.
There should be sports activities which develop my physical faculties and also my mental faculties, and relax me, give me relaxation in my minds, in my mind, in my feelings.
All right.
And well, also develops me for the sake of increasing my proximity to Allah Almighty and my productivity in that line.
Direction. All right. We'll talk more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Professor Naqavi. We're discussing what things parents should be keeping in mind while they are developing their child physically. Professor Naqavi, you said that sports are really important. They relieve us. It takes out the negative energy. And don't you think the things that we discussed that were important with the physical development, that we have to actually reduce our screen time and do a more lot of interaction with the environment for our physical development. Don't you think this physical development, while we're working on this, it automatically increases our cognitive development as well?
Yes, there are many sports which help that cognitive development, of course. Because any physical exercise involves all our faculties together, especially our emotions. And there are certain games which are mind games,
yeah,
like for chess. or other things. Of course, again, there are indoor games. Indoor games are good for mental development, but outdoor games like swimming, archery, I don't think horse riding, even self-defense techniques, which are very important today.
All right.
We need to develop these things. I mean, when you talk about defense or self-defense, it is religiously necessary for us to be able to ward off the enemy, to defend ourselves.
Yes.
So even self-defense techniques may have to be learned by even women, not just men.
All right, yeah. And actually, you remind me of the beautiful lines from Ayatollah Khamenei, which are posted in our gym. We have a women's gym over here, and it's written in each and every corner over there that how important it is for women to do exercise, because women are also a part of the population and they contribute a lot. They compose a lot of percentage of this population. Well, what else should we be...
I mean, a child, for example, especially when you're talking about the girls and women, their physical development, physical maintenance of their health is very important in their being good wives and good mothers.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to have that energy, also, whether it's taking care of their husbands and the responsibilities which they have towards their husbands. So that physical development is very important.
Yes.
Apart from the mental and cognitive things and emotions, physical strength and physical perseverance is very important, especially for girls and women. And therefore, sports and many things which are necessary for that physical development are necessary. There's no doubt about it.
I actually met a girl in the gym, and she said she was 16 years old and she was not married yet. And she was saying, I am here basically to get ready for my marriage. I said, how? How could gymming help that? And she was like, my parents tell me you should not be complaining to your husband tomorrow that I have backache, I have this ache, I have this and that. So you should not be complaining. So in order to keep her from those complaints, they're sending her gym to develop physically. Well, we'll talk more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, teach your children swimming and archery.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is IRIB English Radio. I'm with Professor Naqavi, and we're discussing the things that parents or educators should be keeping in mind while they're developing their children physically. Yes, Professor, do we have something else to add in physical development?
Physical, as I said, it has many aspects, and every aspect plays a role in certain specific fields, if we get time to think of the realms and the domains of our behavior where this mental and physical development is going to be useful for that aspect of life, as we just mentioned that this physical development of a girl is very important for her in her married life.
So till
she becomes ready for that, she has to take care of these things, which are physical. Her physical physique and her health are very important in making her husband attached to her.
Exactly.
So that is very important. That should be one of the things that for the family relationship, which is necessary for the future.
All right.
And then, of course, many things can be mentioned in the physical issues. But the most important thing, the connection between the cognition and the physical development, is through the attitude and the emotions that are required.
All right.
So we need to, as we mentioned before, there are two major factors in our emotions, aspects or two faculties. One is the faculty of, according to the traditional school of thought that we have on the one hand anger and on the other hand we have temptations and desires. These have to be balanced.
Yeah.
And they have to be brought under the control of the intellect, the rational thinking, logical thinking that we have. Through that we need to control them. And then these emotions have to be made, channelized towards those activities which are proper.
Yeah.
And so this is the axis between the cognition and the physical activities that we have to carry out in our everyday lives. So emotions have to be managed, that we can control our emotions and feelings and do things which we want our children to do. We make them feel, when they become angry, we should make them control their anger. They go after something which they, for example, desire too much, we need to control that. For example, if you feel that your child wants to eat something, make him sit him down and give him some time and think over what he wants. Discuss it with him. Discuss this with her. Oh, you just want to go and open the refrigerator and eat anything that you get a hand on? No, that's not the way.
Well, that's also coming in the emotional development, and inshallah we'll discuss emotional development in another episode. Well, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you want to listen to our programs again, please go back to our official website. That's www.parstoday.com. If you have any questions, any suggestions, any comments for our program, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also search us on our social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam Radio. And when you go to our official website, parstoday.com, you'll find a tab, Call of Islam. Over there, you can find our programs. Until another session, fi amanallah, God bless you all.
Do you know? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم everyone. Welcome back to a new episode of For a Better Life. This is Asma, and as usual, we're going to go through some ideas that might help us improve our life. Actually, I'm not a preacher and I do not have the intention to lecture you as a preacher. It's a heart-to-heart whisper and we'll have some time to think about things that matter the most in our life as human beings. So there are delicate things in life that we don't come to notice until it's too late. There's this famous poem that says, "All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. You must have heard it. It actually is a poem by William Shakespeare. And then it says, they have their exits and their entrance. Well, right in this very line, the whole story of life lies. Now, in literature, the theme of life being a short journey keeps reappearing, and it definitely catches too much of attention from the audience. As for every single one of us, we do think of a day that we no longer have any more of time to do anything. It's an inevitable truth that no one lives forever, and there'd be a day that will die after all. Now, don't call me a bitter-tongued speaker for saying this, but really, how often do we think of this fact? How does it affect our life? Is it a depressing thing to keep death in mind? What's the point of remembering death every now and then? Well, before we go for the answers, let's go for a tiny little break and then we'll follow today's topic.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Welcome back. Thank you for sticking around. This is For a Better Life, and we are talking about the short journey of life and the fact that death is very close. And in any time, I might be gone forever. And that is so sad. And I start my eternal life, which is the good news, of course. Well, every time we hear of someone's death, a moment of manifestation happens to us. It's as if the clock of our soul stops for a second and we can see the true face of life. At that very moment, I remember that all the hustles and bustles of life are trivial and all the beauties of life are mere distractions. If I have not been aware of the essence of my life, if I have not been close to my Lord, to the one who'll stay on my side forever. I remember there was a story which was called The Mask of the Red Death by Edgar Allan Poe, and it was a nice story. I recommend you to go for that, because through this story, you will see different phases of life. Actually, it's metaphorical and it's got too much of ideas in that. But the most fascinating part of that was the fact that whenever a death comes in the middle, whenever they heard of a death of someone, the clock that was sit there in the middle of the crowd started making a sound so that everyone would notice that something has happened, something which is very important. That's exactly what happens in our ordinary life. Whenever we hear about death that happens around us, we feel like it's keeping us. For a moment, we feel like, oh my God, what's happening? A moment of manifestation, just as I told you. Now, thinking of death might sound so dark and depressing, but once I heard it from a scholar who looked at it from a beautiful angle, which actually came from the narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, he said, if we look at this transitory life as a short death, and in the opposite, look at death as the beginning of our life, then death is going to sound as freedom. Just like you're going to get rid of whatever that is so difficult, whatever that you've been through as a drudgery, you're going to say bye to all of that and then start a new life. Just like how Imam Ali alayhi salam puts it and says, death to a real believer and obedient of Allah is like taking out a worn out dress and wearing a new one. So just imagine how would that look like? It would be just as freedom, something new, something so cool. So I guess they must change the inscription on the tombstone and change the date of death with the date of birth. I mean, they have to write it as the date of birth instead of death itself. Because that's the true thing that happens. And maybe if we looked at it like this ever since we were a kid, then we wouldn't have this dark idea of death. So I guess they must focus on this very point. Everyone who's writing the tombstones, actually, I guess they have to change it all. Because then it would be more of a happy thing, not something mournful. Now, the first step is settled. Death might sound so gloomy, but if we look carefully, it's freedom. And it's to get rid of the sadness and difficulties of life. All the drudgeries, you're going to put them back. And there'd be no more of the sadness, no more of the terrible things that you feel every single night you put your head on the pillow.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
The next point is about what's the use of remembering death so frequently? Well, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, constant remembrance of death will help us from getting too much immersed in the traps of life. And of course, it'll have us make the best of our chances. And, you know, you're going to be more focused on the things you want. If I think of no end for myself, then I'll stop trying and I'll perhaps stop seizing the opportunities for improvement. Maybe I'll be selfish and greedy, and perhaps I'll see no goodness in helping others. Our holy book always reminds us of the temporary nature of life, and it keeps reminding us to seize the chances of salvation and never give in to this materialistic, mundane life. Another important fact about thinking of death is that by keeping this thought in our mind, we actually are saving ourselves from the possibility of feeling regretful for the things we should have done and yet we didn't. Now we got it settled. There's no more fear of death, and actually it's going to be a new start. And the goodness of keeping this thought in our mind is that it's going to help us have more of motivation, is going to help us think of every single day as a new chance that is not going to come back to us. And who knows, maybe the next second I will no longer be among the people who are the settlers of the earth. I might be gone. And so this is very much sad if we do not take the opportunity and if we do not actually do the things that are going to be our only achievements that will help us in the world to come. Because all these good deeds that we're going to do in this world, the mere use of them is to come to our rescue in a time to come in the other life. So that's all. Life is very much of a chance, and then death is a new birth through which you're going to make use of all the chances you've used in your life, of all the chances you've seized in your life and made the best out of them. So thank you, dear listeners. I hope you enjoyed today's session. Until another program, I bid you farewell. May Allah protect you and shower you with His blessings. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, He knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, He knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, He knows. Share, He knows. Allah
knows. In the limelight.
In the U.S., House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul Pelosi, has been attacked at their California home with a hammer. The attacker has been identified as 42-year-old David DePape. DePape will be charged with attempted homicide, among other charges, according to San Francisco police. A motive for the attack is still unknown. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. The British newspaper The Guardian has more on this story. Paul Pelosi, husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, was hospitalized with a skull fracture on Friday, 28th of October, after he was attacked at the couple's home in California with a hammer by an assailant who was reported to have shouted, "Where is Nancy? Where is Nancy?" Paul Pelosi, an 82-year-old, underwent successful surgery to repair a skull fracture and other serious injuries sustained during the assault, and is expected to make a full recovery, according to Nancy Pelosi's spokesperson, Drew Hamill. Earlier, on Friday morning, Paul Pelosi was attacked at home by an assailant who acted with force and threatened his life while demanding to see the Speaker of the House. Drew Hamill said in a statement on Friday afternoon, 28th of October. San Francisco police said that Paul Pelosi managed to call 911 but didn't directly report what was happening, but that a dispatcher sent police officers to follow up with a well-being check at about 2:27 a.m. local time in the early hours of Friday morning. They found an adult male confronting Paul Pelosi, and a hammer was being grasped by both men. The suspect pulled the hammer away from Pelosi and violently assaulted him with it. Our officers immediately tackled the suspect, disarmed him, took him into custody, said Bill Scott, the chief of the San Francisco Police Department. Bill Scott named the suspect as David DePape, a 42-year-old, and said he broke in through a back door. Charges are to be brought at the San Francisco County Jail, including attempted homicide, assault with a deadly weapon, abuse of an elderly person, burglary, and other felonies. David DePape remained in the hospital on Friday evening, but the San Francisco Police Chief Bill Scott did not disclose his condition. Scott said police were still investigating the motive for the attack, but said this was not a random act, this was intentional. It was reported by CNN that the suspect intended to tie the victim up until Nancy Pelosi got home, and that he had posted right-wing and conspiracy theories online, including content promoting the lie that former President Donald Trump was deprived of victory in the 2020 presidential election because of voter fraud. In a statement to CNN, an acquaintance of David DePape said he appeared to be out of touch with reality. Two of the suspect's relatives also told the network that DePape, who grew up in British Columbia, Canada, was estranged from his family. In addition to multiple conspiracy posts on his Facebook account, which was reviewed by CNN and later taken down by Meta on Friday, David DePape is also believed to have managed a blog to which he regularly posted screeds concerning the ruling class. The blog, which the San Francisco Chronicle reviewed and was later taken down, had a banner that said, "Welcome to Big Brother's censorship hell," along with numerous conspiracy posts about the US government, media outlets, and technology companies. President Joe Biden called the attack on Paul Pelosi despicable and denounced people who spread lies about stolen elections for corroding the political climate in America and contributing to politically motivated violence. "Enough is enough," Joe Biden told supporters at a Democratic Party fundraiser in Philadelphia on Friday, 28th of October. "Every person of good conscience needs to clearly and unambiguously stand up against the violence in our politics, regardless of what your politics are. Democracy is literally, not figuratively, on the ballot this year," said Joe Biden, who who warned about the dangers of extremism in an impassioned speech in Philadelphia last month. The president said reports indicated the attack on Paul Pelosi was aimed at Nancy Pelosi and noted that the suspected assailant used the same chant, "Where is Nancy?" heard from supporters of former President Donald Trump when they stormed the U.S. Capitol building on 6th of January 2021. Joe Biden said it was not surprising that one party's repeated lies about stolen elections could affect people who may not be so well-balanced. According to the Associated Press, the attacker had specifically targeted the Pelosi family home. Video footage of the house showed glass shattered in a side entrance, indicating where the break-in may have occurred. A person briefed on the situation told the Associated Press that the intruder had confronted Paul Pelosi while demanding to know where his wife was. The speaker, who is second in line to succeed the president, was not at home at the time of the attack, but was in Washington, D.C. with security protection that accompanies her at all times. The website of NBC News has more details for us. San Francisco's district attorney said they expect to file attempted murder and other charges against a man accused of attacking Paul Pelosi with a hammer at his home on Friday, 28th of October. Anytime you strike someone in the head in the fashion that Mr. Pelosi was hit, it is clear to us that he was attempting to kill him, district attorney Brooke Jenkins told NBC Bay Area on Friday evening. She told the station her office expects to file charges of attempted murder, residential burglary, abuse of an elderly person, and assault with a deadly weapon. The suspect, David DePape, is accused of breaking into the Pelosi home and striking Paul Pelosi, the husband of Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, at least once with a hammer. Paul Pelosi, an 82-year-old, underwent surgery for a skull fracture and is now recovering, a spokesman for Nancy Pelosi has confirmed. San Francisco Police Chief Bill Scott said the attack was intentional and not a random act. A motive in the assault has not been released. David DePape was in hospital on Friday, 28th of October, but will be booked one way or the other, either in person or in absentia, Bill Scott said. Meanwhile, Representative Benny Thompson, the chairman of the House panel investigating the January 6th Capitol riot, called the attack on Paul Pelosi abhorrent and urged his congressional colleagues to reject divisive conspiracy theories that he said have fueled violence. Unfortunately, the attack against Paul Pelosi appears to be a symptom of a much larger problem within our democracy, said Benny Thompson, Democrat from Mississippi. He added, in recent years, we have seen a rise in domestic terrorism fueled in part by violent, racist, anti-Semitic and anti-democratic rhetoric. Benny Thompson cited the deadly 2017 white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, and the Capitol riot of 6th of January 2021 as examples of how armed attackers have used violence to impose their views. So-called vigilantes have been intimidating voters at ballot drop boxes and harassing local election officials. America is better than this, Benny Thompson added. I call on my colleagues in Congress and elected officials across the nation to put country over party and reject the conspiracy theories that are proving so divisive, despite any perceived political advantage, Benny Thompson said. Thompson, who also chairs the House Committee on Homeland Security, called on federal agencies and law enforcement to reinforce efforts to protect officials and elections as the midterm elections approach.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, ways of keeping secret. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of the ways of keeping secrets in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that Islam gives importance to the secrets of the people, and it says that it is necessary on someone who has the secrets of others to keep it and to save it and to do not share it with the people, to do not disclose it with the people. Therefore, one of the ways which is been said in the Islamic teachings is that we must acknowledge people about the importance of keeping secrets, the advantages of keeping secrets. If we are aware of advantages of keeping secrets, then obviously everyone, whenever they have a secret, they will save it, they will secure it, they will keep it, they will not share it with everyone. Therefore, one of the reasons that today, if we see that we are sharing our secrets with someone, or maybe if the backbiting has become something normal, or it is normalized in the societies, it is only because we are unaware of the importance of keeping secrets. And this is important, that when you tell someone about the importance of it, when we acknowledge people, when we tell about the personal life of the people, how important it is, as it is their life, like as it is, as their own personal life is important, therefore people will give importance to the other's life. Generally, we just think about ourselves, and this is the material life, that think about yourself and not the others. So this is wrong. We need to think about others as well when we are living in a society. And the way we keep our own secrets, we must keep others' secrets as well, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the ways of keeping secrets. And we said that one of the ways is to be attentive towards the importance of keeping secret, or to acknowledge people about the importance of keeping secrets. Because if people know about it, then obviously they will struggle in keeping the secrets of the others, and they will not disclose the secrets of the others or the things that they know about the other's life. We can see, like, for example, Imam Ali alayhi salam has said that jumi'a khayru dunya wal akhirati fi kitmani sirri wa musadaqati al akhyar. There are two things in which all the goodness of this world and the hereafter is gathered in two things. Number one, keeping secrets, fi kitmani sirri, to keep the secrets, to secure the secrets, وَمُصَادَقَةِ الْأَخْيَارِ, and having a good friend, a friend who performs good deeds. So these two things basically have, in these two things, the goodness of the world, this world and the hereafter, it is gathered. On the other hand, he says, for example, like سِرُّكَ سُرُورُكَ إِن كَتَمْتَهُ, he says that in your secrets, there is happiness for you. You know, if I have something and I need to hide from the people, maybe I have done something wrong. I don't want people to know it. It is related to my personal life. And if people know about it, they will think wrongly about me, or maybe they will have another perspective about me. And maybe I'm not like that. So therefore, when, as far as it is being secured, as far as if this secret is not leaked, then obviously I am happy. But when once it is leaked, then maybe it is hard for me to live. Therefore, there are two things. We should not commit such things which make us feel ashamed in the public. On the other hand, if we have secrets, we need to keep it, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/EN.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. But I want you to know that when I talk about the generation that is losing its faith, I am not talking about the younger generation. I am talking about the generation before the youth of today, the older generation of our society. These who believe in some things blindly. Yes, they come to the majlis in the mosque to hear the sermons and storytelling. Yes, they come to the congregational prayers at the mosque. But because none of this is based on reason or logic, they can also be easily convinced to burn down the very same mosque, to trample Imam Hussein and to give up all their religiosity for those things they think have real value. They do this and you can see them do this. Today, one of the real crises that we are facing is in the generation before the youth, those who lack the awareness and understanding of the Muslim youth today and who sadly also lack the deep, unshakable faith of two generations past. They lack the thoughtfulness and understanding by virtue of which they could nurture a strong and abiding faith in themselves, and are instead held by the bonds of money, position, status, desire, prosperity, and comfort. Nor do they have a strong ark or impregnable fortress like one or two centuries ago in which, at the very least, they could shelter their faith, even if this was only acquired blindly.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
A 100 years ago, these snares for one's thoughts, faith and beliefs did not exist. In those days, the hands of the enemy, those treacherous fingers, had not penetrated so deeply into the fabric of our society. There were still plots which had yet to come to fruition. They still had to deprive people of their fundamental religious faith if they wanted to heap misery on them. But these plots have since succeeded. The generation before the youth, the generation who are no longer young but are rather the youth of yesterday, they are trying to build their faith and belief in the face of a flood without even having a firm foundation on which to build. How lucky are those who chose their faith based on understanding, comprehension, awareness, and knowledge. A flood will sometimes carry off great trees, while leaving those tender saplings unscathed, because their roots go twice as deep into the grounds. Those things that have a foundation do not shake so easily. They do not fall so easily. In any case, this is a reality that is present in Islam. My brothers, the faith that has value is faith based on understanding, the faith that is joined with comprehension and awareness, faith based on insight, with open eyes, without fear of criticism.
You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Lebanon and Israel have finalized a U.S. brokered deal aimed at resolving a maritime dispute. President Michel Aoun signed a letter on Thursday endorsing the agreement. The final paperwork was submitted to the United Nations in Naqoura, southern Lebanon, concluding a long path of indirect negotiations with the Israeli regime. Separately, the Israeli cabinet, led by Prime Minister Yair Lapid, also approved the agreement. The regime's representative then delivered the signed copy to the U.N. at the Naqoura point. Hezbollah Secretary General stressed in a brief statement that the deal is a victory for Lebanon's government, people, and resistance. Nasrallah also declared the end of Hezbollah's exceptional mobilization over the maritime dispute, saying the resistance movement had accomplished its mission regarding the issue. The Hezbollah leader said the agreement is not an international treaty.
What happened in Naqoura is not normalization with Israel. This deal is not an international treaty and is not a recognition of Israel. Israel itself has admitted it received no security guarantees.
U.S. Envoy Amos Hochstein, who was with the Lebanese delegation in the southern Lebanese town of Naqoura, had met the top Lebanese officials.
I truly believe and hope that this can be an economic turning point in Lebanon for a new era of investment and continued support to lift up the economy and make sure that whatever arrangements happen, they're done openly, transparently, and making sure that the benefits are felt directly by all the Lebanese people.
Experts believe this agreement would put Lebanon on the map of natural gas exporters. President Michel Aoun stressed in his statement that demarcating the southern maritime border is a technical matter that has no political implications and won't change his country's policy towards the Israeli regime. U.S. President Joe Biden has hailed the maritime border deal as a historic breakthrough. For Lebanon, it unlocks the possibility to exploit its own natural resources at a time when the West is seeking gas suppliers and looking for alternatives to Russian gas. Maryam Saleh, Naqoura, South Lebanon.
Many millions of people living across the 27-nation EU are struggling to survive. Brussels resident Jefferson Araujo has endured two rent increases since March. His landlord says her mortgage is going up and so a further rent hike is needed.
You go to the market, you cannot buy anything anymore because the price is too high. And I'm thinking
maybe to leave Brussels, because I'm working in a hotel 10 hours a day. Like, sometimes I have just one day off a week.
In an attempt to bring down soaring inflation, the European Central Bank, which manages the euro, has announced interest rates are going up by a further 75 basis points. That represents a huge increase for people repaying home loans. The economic outlook could get even worse, the ECB warns.
Confidence could deteriorate further, and supply-side constraints could worsen again. Energy and food costs could also remain persistently higher than expected.
Some EU leaders have warned the ECB that increasing interest rates so aggressively could push the eurozone into a deep recession. Higher rates impede business expansion and employment. Charities fighting social injustice often point out all of those taking the decisions that lead to higher inflation and interest rates are insulated from the impact simply because they are the richest individuals in society. Critics say the EU's move to cut out Russia's cheap gas over the war in Ukraine is backfiring. Despite this, a ninth round of sanctions against Moscow is being prepared.
The Commission and the EES are obviously constantly working in the context of the sanctions on making sure that we are ready should there be a need for further sanctions.
Peace seems to be a dirty word in Western capitals. This as the US weapons and energy sectors make enormous profits, while ordinary EU citizens pay a very high price. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Iranians have held nationwide rallies to condemn the Wednesday terrorist attack in the southern city of Shiraz. The protesters took to the streets in different cities following Friday prayers. They chanted slogans and held banners, calling for the perpetrators and their backers to be brought to justice.
Today, we're here to show the world that we are all together. We are a powerful country. We're going to fight against terrorism. We're going to fight against violence. You want us to be separated. You want us to fight against each other, but we are the one. We are powerful.
At least 13 people, including two children, were killed after gunmen opened fire on pilgrims at the Shah Cheragh Holy Shrine in Shiraz. 26 others were wounded. The Daesh terror group claimed responsibility shortly after the attack.
We strongly condemn any acts of terrorism and desecration of Muslim sanctities. We want to say that we hate London-based news channels like Iran International, Manoto and BBC because they are instigating violence and unrest in Iran.
We are here to send this message to Israel, the U.S. and their allies that through creating riots and unrest in the country, they cannot achieve their sinister goal of disintegration of Iran. We are united.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has called on security agencies, the judiciary, intellectuals, activists, and the entire nation to act in unison to confront the current which is disregarding and disrespecting people's lives, security, and sanctities. Meanwhile, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has also vowed that the Islamic Republic would deliver a crushing response to those who were behind the bloodshed.
The ralliers have called on Iranian authorities to prosecute the main perpetrators of the heinous crime of terrorist attack in Shiraz and take all necessary measures to maintain security in the country as soon as possible. Saman Kujurib, Tehran.
On Wednesday, Italy's new far-right-led government of Giorgia Meloni won a confidence vote in the Senate with 115 votes in favour, 79 against and 5 abstentions. The new executive can now get down to business. Meloni, aged 45, is the leader and one of the founders of Brothers of Italy, the party that spearheaded a right-wing coalition to victory in Italy last month's election.
Among the many weights I have on my shoulders today is the fact that I am the first woman ever to lead this nation as Prime Minister.
During Tuesday's first speech in the Chamber of Deputies, Meloni had presented a political program which aims as a priority to counter soaring energy bills and a looming